Hello, my name is Jim Judges and I'm a Senior Academic Technologist at the University of Warwick, and this is the LDCU Talking Online Learning Podcast. In this episode we hear from Dot Powell, the Director of Teaching and Learning Enhancement in the Warwick Business School, WBS. We hear about the way that the pandemic led WBS to adopt a new way of working as they moved most of their delivery online whilst maintaining quality, engagement and student satisfaction. I was impressed when I heard about the scale and effectiveness of Dot's team and colleagues who helped to make the switch. As we will hear, it was a real team effort. Perhaps we shouldn't be too surprised that a department that's already renowned for many of its existing high-quality distance and blended learning programs was able to switch to this mode. But that isn't to take away anything from the size of the challenge and the work that had to go into delivering what was needed during this very difficult time. This is a really good listen with lots of experiences and ideas that are well worth sharing. Perhaps you could introduce yourself and say a little bit about your work and your role here at Warwick.
I'm Dot Powell. I have the grand title of Director of Teaching and Learning Enhancement at Warwick Business School. What that actually means is that I lead the team that support teaching and learning at the business school. That includes support for media production, publishing online, helping academics to use technology in new and innovative ways in their teaching, and also being involved in sort of wider school initiatives around things like assessment, marking and feedback, and anything else that I get dragged into.
Yes, indeed. It'd be useful just to think about the context. This podcast is about online learning in all of its guises, and there's been plenty of that in the last year. But before we get into the changes and impacts of the pandemic over the last year, could you say a bit about how things were arranged related to online learning and technology support before the pandemic, and then we'll move on to think about what happened in last March onwards.
So we have always had a key role in online learning at WBS because of the distance learning MBA, and we also run a master's program in central banking with the Bank of England. And those two programs have been sort of our bread and butter as far as online learning is concerned. So we were principally responsible for actually developing and publishing the module content, working with authors to do that, creating the video content, and then also publishing that content. So taking account of things like accessibility, presentation, using our platform in the best ways that we possibly could. And then a very small part of that, of those programs, and something that is quite key in the context of COVID, was our support for live synchronous online teaching. And in a module, which would be a sort of 10 credit module, there were in fact 10 hours of synchronous online delivery. So relatively small amount of that going on. And we would provide a moderator that would sit next to the person who's delivering the session and help them with the platform.
That's interesting to hear then. And that does mean, I think, that you're certainly one or two steps ahead, or well ahead perhaps, of other possibly departments and faculties who were doing less online and blended learning before the pandemic. So what about that then? What impact did the arrival of COVID have, and how did you approach that, first of all, last spring and summer? And then maybe we'll talk about what happened this year as well. But what was the impact like, first of all?
Well, the impact wasn't immediately obvious how great the impact would be on us, because obviously undergraduate teaching the first time we locked down had pretty much finished. We did have quite a lot of postgraduate teaching to do, and the WBS was one of the few places that decided to stick with online synchronous delivery, which presented us with a large problem, but not as large as it later became the following September. So the problem we had was that we had a model that wasn't sustainable. We couldn't have moderators in all of those sessions. It just wouldn't have been practical. And also our model relied on a moderator who was actually physically sitting next to the person who was delivering the session. So again, that couldn't happen. So the beginning of sort of the theme really that has continued throughout the whole of the last 12 months was developing independence in other people, and that became our key role, was to develop this the ability to deliver these sessions independently. So the business school decided it was going to use a model for delivering teaching, which became known as the 1+1+1 model, and that was roughly equated to in a 3-hour per week module, you'd have an hour of synchronous online delivery, an hour of asynchronous content, and an hour of could be face-to-face small group teaching if that was possible, or it could be online small group teaching. Either way, we ended up with lots and lots of online teaching. So in the March, what we did was train an army of new moderators. So our first thought was, well, we can't moderate all of these sessions. Who can? So we have people from everywhere. I mean, everybody and his dog learned how to moderate a session. And two of my team, Karen and Nick, did an amazing job training people in how to moderate sessions. And that got us through that first, well, the third term of that year. People continued to deliver with help from somebody else. And we delivered a really large number of sessions in that way. But obviously that wasn't going to be sustainable moving forward into the September, because once undergraduate teaching started, you know, that the numbers were going to explode yet again.
Can I just ask something specific then, Dot, especially for anybody that isn't familiar, but what tools are we talking about then? Because, of course, across the university, people may be familiar with Moodle, but in WBS, you use a different learning environment. And also, perhaps you can say what tool you're using for the live classroom components.
Our learning management system is called MyWBS, and it's a bespoke system which was built from the ground up for WBS, and initially was built for the distance learning MBA, so with a focus on the online material, the delivery of online materials, but it's become a sort of one-stop shop for everything. So it does assessment and feedback as well, student records, everything is held within MyWBS, which has positives and negatives about it, to be honest, and that's something that we're very aware of. We have some other tools that are integrated within MyWBS, so Turnitin, which, you know, would be the same for anybody using Moodle, and for the delivery of synchronous online teaching, we use Blackboard Collaborate Ultra, which is integrated via an API, so that students can just go to their module, click on a button that says enter classroom, and go into the lecture or seminar or whatever it is that's being delivered.
That's interesting to hear. And has that continued? Because I'm aware that, well, you will be aware perhaps, that much of the rest of the university tend to make use of Microsoft Teams for a lot of that live delivery. Has your use of Blackboard continued?
It has. In fact, we've run 14,000 online sessions in Blackboard in the last year. But on top of that, we are using Teams. We're only using it for executive MBA and full-time MBA delivery. And there are sort of complicated reasons about that. But one of them was a really simple one, that when we were testing it in lecture theatres, when we were moving towards a hybrid delivery, the sound was better using Teams. It was as simple as that. So that was the tool that we chose. Yeah. So there's a bit of a division now between what we tend to call premium programs like the MBAs and then everything else. And everything else is on Blackboard, and the MBAs are on Teams.
That's interesting to hear then. So you obviously had your work cut out, and you trained up your army of moderators. But then what about this last academic year then? How did things have to change? And what's that been like? What was the autumn like? And how did the year pan out?
So having trained our moderators, that still was clearly not going to be anywhere near enough support. It became clear to us as well that for small sort of seminar size type of teaching, it would be a little bit of an overkill as well to have a separate moderator available to sort of support a session. So what we did was train faculty, and we ran two sessions a week for I think about 10 weeks, if not more, called delivering WBS live sessions, because we badge the Collaborate Ultra sessions as WBS Live, delivering those independently. We actually chased people down to get them trained. We had a team who were actually contacting people and said, you're teaching in the new term, you need to attend this session. And there was sort of, you know, everybody was ticked off to make sure everybody knew how to deliver sessions independently. And that included a little bit of pedagogy, but it was more about confidence building. And it was about getting people into a position where they could start a session off, they could share their slides, share videos if they wanted to. And in support of that, as well as providing them with some online training of their own, we did a few other things which were intended to sort of help build their confidence. So we created an online course, which also covered creating asynchronous materials, which we might get onto in a minute. So there was an online course which was created as a series of questions, which was sort of, how do I do this? How do I share my slides? How do I start a session? How do I set up breakout room? We also gave them a sort of go and play room to practice in, so that was always available, and there was a link to that which was available for them to practice. We encouraged teaching groups to meet in that room and practice with each other, and we encouraged people to practice with their peers and sort of colleagues to practice delivering sessions. And then we also were available for sort of one-to-one queries. So I say we, more the teaching and learning consultants on the team, they've got people contacting them saying, you know, I've got a panic, I want to be able to share my tablet, you know, and I don't know how to do that. And so we would help out with things like that as well.
Yeah. And what about that 1+1+1 model? Have you managed to stick with that? Has that evolved? Have you got any spin-offs or versions of that? What's happened?
It has been quite successful, I think. It all started from a chance comment in a very early meeting where, you know, of course, everybody was panicking. And one of us said, it needs to be very, very simple. It needs to be something like, watch this, do this, read this. But it has provided us with great flexibility. So for the most flexible bit of it is that one, which is the small group teaching. So where we were able to pivot back to a bit of small group teaching, it didn't change the rest of the timetable because it was already timetabled in. And it also helped with students who were self-isolating or students who weren't able to get into the country. There was a face-to-face version for those who were present, but there was also an online version for those who weren't present. And we did tinker around with hybrid seminars, but it really wasn't that successful. It was much easier to have online and face-to-face versions. And then, of course, we all went back online again. Everything went back to fully online, and we were really able to just...
Yeah, and we might say a bit about what plans you have for next academic year and what's coming next. But just thinking about the experience from this year then, what other challenges have you faced, you, your team, staff, and perhaps students? So can you think of any challenges that are worth highlighting?
Well, just I think to finish off on synchronous online delivery, one of the challenges there was the challenge of sending people out into the wilderness and saying, you know, off you go and teach, you can do it independently now, you're ready, whatever. But these platforms are never completely reliable, as we all know, and there's always going to be the possibility that something goes wrong. So we had to work out how to set up a help desk, and that was one of the biggest innovations, I think, and I can't take any credit for it, but one of our team sort of worked out how to do it, and we've now got a really nice little system where, using a variety of technologies including Teams and Power Apps and a link from MS Forms, if you have a problem in your session, you can literally click on the link, fill in a form, and the message goes back to my team. It refreshes every 60 seconds or so. So you will then get somebody who's on call on the help desk will appear in your online session and say, hi, what can I do? How can I help you? That was a challenge, setting that up, making it work, working out all the logistics. But it has been something that's been a great sort of benefit, I think, to the people who are teaching. The other one was to maintain standards of accessibility in the face of an enormous number of faculty produced videos being created. So for the asynchronous content, again, as part of the training course that we created online, we gave instructions and information about how to create those videos. But we went for a approach where faculty created the videos and sent them through to my team for processing. Processing included putting a nice poster frame on the front of the video, subtitling it, and hosting it on a platform and then sending an embed code back to the member faculty so that they could then embed that in their module. That has been an enormous challenge for the team to keep going, to keep turning around these videos. They had a 5-day, we offered a 5-day sort of service level agreement that if you got your videos to us 5 days in advance of when you needed them, they would come back to you. But that was a lot of work. And we'll be looking for the next academic year at ways we can streamline that, really. Our subtitles were available and there for all videos, but they weren't. We didn't have the capacity to check those subtitles, so the quality of them may not have been as good as we would have liked. So that is something that we're working on, I think, for the new year, because the 1+1+1 model will remain. There will be, you know, the need for asynchronous content.
And therefore, what about the forthcoming? I tend to think in academic years, but forgive me, because perhaps you have some roll-on, roll-off, ongoing.
No, we do
programs.
Have some, but we do still think in terms
yes.
of academic years.
Well, in that case, what about 21-22 and the next academic year? What plans have you got? What tweaks, what changes, or indeed, what are you still trying to work out?
Well, it's all about, it's all to play for, isn't it? Because we don't really know exactly what we're going to be told, you know, following the government's decision to, you know, lift restrictions on the 19th of July. We don't really know exactly where the university is going to go.
Can I just ask you, before you get started, just one specific question, because you sort of mentioned it earlier, and that is, in terms of hybrid, you said that I think you were tended to deliver mainly online, possibly with face-to-face or vice versa. So is it still your intention to offer that choice? Let's say if all restrictions are lifted, would you still plan to offer an option, or what's your or would you still offer hybrid, or would you consider offering hybrid? So what are you thinking there?
Okay, well, so let me start with, say, for example, the undergraduate and large lectures, it's looking will be online, synchronously delivered, as they were in the previous year.
Sure.
Seminars are likely to be face-to-face. That's what students want. I think we're keeping an eye on the international situation. We have a lot of international students, and there may well be a need to still put on online seminars for those students. Our MBA programmes, we've been delivering a hybrid version of the MBA programmes for a little while now, in that version, we have students in the classroom. They're in lecture theatres with perspex around each seat. I don't know whether that's going to remain or whether we'll be removing the perspex. And then some students are accessing remotely. And we have done our best with that. I say we've provided technical assistance in the classrooms to help faculty to teach. I don't think anybody feels it's the best way to teach. So moving forward, I think the aspiration would be that hybrid wouldn't continue too much longer. But again, bearing in mind the needs of the international cohorts that we have, it might need to for some time, I think.
Yeah, I suppose watch this space. What about, perhaps if I could combine two questions in one, what lessons have been learned by you and your team, and maybe any hints and tips for anybody who's still playing catch up and still got to sort some of these things out?
It's interesting that you say playing catch up, because for me, it's all about, I keep talking about falling behind, keeping in step and running ahead. And I think we experienced all of these things. So my example of falling behind would be when teams became much, much bigger in the university than we were ever expecting it to. And when the MBA teaching moved on to teams, and we essentially fell behind as a team because we weren't familiar with the use of teams. And as you will know, it changes on a daily basis anyway. It just never stands still. So we weren't just falling behind, you know, what our colleagues, our faculty colleagues were doing. We're also kept falling behind the platform, which was really frustrating. And one thing we tried was saying, there's really good support from the Central University. Why don't you go there? Here's the link to the Central University support. Why don't we get some training in from the Central University, which we also did. So tried very hard to sort of work together. And we slightly stumbled over our own faculty's belief in us. You know, if we said that they should do something and how to do it. They believed us, but they weren't so sure about Central University, even though we were saying exactly the same things. So in the end, we actually had to almost clone some of the guidance and almost like rebadge it, because then it gave it some sort of credence.
Yes, you know. I suppose that's just as perhaps you realise, it's that, I suppose, getting advice from someone you trust and from a friendly face is probably has more credence, as you said. So that's just interesting to hear, I think. Yeah,
I think that was a feature of the pandemic, that people were lacking in confidence, panicking, they'd been thrown into confusion. They needed a friendly, trustable, you know, face, or trustworthy face, you know, to talk to them, even if that person was saying only what anybody else would say. You know, they just needed that thing. So we managed to keep in step with some things. So where we had a bit of familiarity, we were just about keeping in step. But then really, we were also being asked to run ahead. So we were being asked to almost go out and scope out new ideas and new things that we could, we could do in the future, you know, to keep ahead of the game. So it's for our team, I think there was a lot of stresses and strains just caused by that, you know, that you can't just do what you've always been doing and do it well. You have to run about like a mad headless chicken.
Well, I guess there's been plenty of that. But despite that, I'm sure that your staff and students have benefited from your input. Is there anything else?
I think one of the things that we as a team actually have had to get used to and to accept, and I think we're getting there, is that because we were initially originally the team for quality, you know, so our video content in particular was high quality, publishing was controlled and was well done, and there was a guide that we followed to make sure that, you know, high standards were maintained. It was actually quite hard to let go of that high quality and allow for the fact that the tolerance for lower quality is quite high, actually, if the content is engaging. And getting used to that was quite a difficult thing, but I think quite an important thing. And I'd hope we'd take that forward now, that we would accept that the most important thing is actually the content itself and how engaging it is and how interesting and how it sort of takes the attention. And it doesn't actually matter if it's done with a slightly wobbly webcam.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, actually. And I think... thank goodness for that, you might say, because there's been plenty of authentic delivery and recordings. Mm. And I think the students is quite forgiving, as you say, of quality, partly helped by the fact that lots of content is delivered through services like YouTube, and students and ourselves are used to listening to podcasts, possibly like this or better, where the audio quality might be a little bit authentic. You might have a bit of banging and drilling in the background. But as you say, it's not usually the case that people click away because of the quality of the thing, but they may well click away if the content isn't right. Yes. Mm. Yeah. That's interesting to reflect on. Anything else we've missed, Dot?
I don't think so. I think apart from just that, I think what I've seen is a new appreciation of the value of asynchronous content, you know, the value of the task and the quiz and the, you know, the guided reading. I think that's been a real positive outcome of all of this. And I don't think that will go away now. I think people will be much more in the mindset that they will produce, you know, really engaging online asynchronous stuff that students will find useful.
Well, thanks for your time this afternoon, Dot. It's been great to speak to you, to catch up and to hear all about your work.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And thanks again to Dot Powell for those interesting insights, ideas, and for sharing all of those experiences. The Learning Design Consultancy Unit, or LDCU, here at Warwick, was established to support staff with designing and adapting teaching and learning for online and blended delivery. I hope this discussion and others in this podcast series will prove useful as a way of capturing and sharing experiences. None of us have all the answers, and in some cases, we're still trying to work out what the questions are. But by listening to each other and sharing ideas and experiences, we can hopefully continue to grow, develop, and improve. Thanks for listening.